Good morning, Goldenhawks. Welcome back to Weather Aware, presented by The Morning Show, Laurier's one and only weather radio talk show. I'm your host, the one and only Liam McGuckin. Very sorry for the late start today. That bad snowstorm yesterday is the reason here. Gotta blame the weather, as always. Seems like the plows didn't really respond well to a storm ending in the middle of the afternoon, as I'd say probably half the roads in Waterloo are still very snowy. I'll say this, they did not do a good job cleaning up last night. This is gonna take a long time, a couple days at least, to clear up all the snow. Went to Walmart last night to get a prop for something later today. More on that soon. I think it's cool. Just a little something to let you guys know. More on that later. And so many sidewalks were just not cleared off at all. Very narrowly shoveled pathways going on out there. So I hope that you are able to stay safe out there amongst the aftermath of a nasty, nasty winter storm. And we survived semester one. I mean, for me, it was less of a survival thing and more of, you know, watching movies for studying kind of thing. But you know how film courses are. I get to watch American Psycho and Back to the Future and write about it in an exam. If you haven't taken film courses, definitely the way to go. I'll say that much. Very fun, especially if you get Drew Jeffries. Drew Jeffries, best film professor I've had. He's very passionate about a movie called The Rocketeer. And if you join his class, American Film Since 1969, unless he changes the syllabus, you are going to get the most passionate lecture of your life as he talks about The Rocketeer two times a week for an hour and 50 minutes. Love that guy. Awesome guy. Anyways, hopefully you guys had a great end to semester one, and semester two looks fun for you at least. I know with me, I get to make an animated film for one of my courses. You'll never guess what the course is called, the animated film. Oh my gosh, I get to make an animated film for the animated film? Who would have thought, huh? I'm thinking stop motion right now, but as I'm testing out stop motion, I'm gaining a lot more respect. And I already had a lot of respect for stop motion animators. I know it's a very tedious task, but a very rewarding one. And I'm sure that's the case, but a small little clip took me around an hour. So, and that's maybe for 5 seconds. So that's just lovely. I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be fun and cool. I'm excited to try it out. I'll say that much. I also hope you guys had a fantastic winter break as well. I feel like for whatever reason, this year they tried to end exam season much earlier compared to last year because tons of people I knew, both friends and like classmates, they left on the final day of classes because, at least from what I gathered, it was a lot of, you know, take-home exams, or some courses it was more just an assignment thing over the course of the semester, and there is no final at all. So, I don't know. I found that a little weird, but I'm taking it. I got an extra week of winter break. You know, I was able to leave a whole week early, which obviously isn't as good as getting close to a month off, as some did, but I will happily take an extra week of winter break, chilling with the fam back home, you know? I can also happily report that my lizard, Addy, or Attenborough, finally came out of brumation right in time for Christmas, which was just about the best Christmas miracle I could ask for. You could also call this next thing a miracle or call it a curse. There was a ton of storms that happened over the winter break. The biggest one I remember was going out shopping on New Year's Eve, and there was some unofficial blizzard going on. I'm calling it a blizzard. I don't think it was a blizzard. It was clearly just some kind of lake effect system akin to what Waterloo got early December, I want to say. The thing that gave us the first snow day of the season. It was like that, but imagine it in Mississauga. I don't know. It was a bad storm, but gotta say, it was very fun getting to go shopping in that at night. It is very concerning how many people don't know how to drive in a winter storm in Ontario. But other than a bunch of storms, my winter break was fairly uneventful. You know, I did make a huge dent in my show watch list, at least, so that's good. You know, I watched Pluribus Paradise and binged all seasons of Stranger Things because my friend told me season 5 would be really cool, only to be massively let down. If you haven't seen, the writing for season 5 was so bad that people gaslit themselves into thinking there's a secret 9th episode coming out. Some movement online called Conformity Gate. My only thoughts on that is that the Duffer Brothers do not have a career anymore after their entire fan base thinks the finale was purposely so bad that it was really Vecna controlling the audience. I think it was also maybe revealed that they used ChatGPT. They had a few ChatGPT tabs in the new documentary they released. Don't know why they leave that in, unless it's not. You know, that's why I say allegedly, maybe. I have no clue. Anywho, I want to give a warm welcome back to my wacky world of weather that is weather aware. Because Lord knows we need a warm welcome when it's ice cold outside. As for what's new this semester, there's a few things. First off, probably the biggest thing you're noticing right now, this isn't Thursday, and you'd be right. I'm back on the Friday schedule, which diehard Weather Aware fans know was how my first batch of shows were scheduled. And personally, to be completely honest, Friday shows have always been my favorite. You know, I love giving weekend forecasts and Weather Aware. Come on, it's just a fantastic show to end off the work week with. As I said last time, I came back from a winter break. I'm going to maybe try some more innovative things, maybe add some more new features. I'm still toying around if I can do live phone calls on the show. I think that would be really cool. Do some weather trivia, live weather reports, weather stories, actual fan mail. I think that would be cool. I also think at some point ads are going to start rolling on Radio Laurier, which means more. It's going to be more like a professional radio station, which is awesome, where pretty much I'm going to say something like, I don't know, and now a word from our sponsors, and then instead of a music break, I play a break of ads, or I can do both. I gotta toy around with that, you know? I gotta figure that stuff out. That's about all I can think of about what's new so far, you know, and you'll be able to find me every Friday from 10 to 12. Same time as last semester, just on Fridays instead, right here for the next couple months. Now for the show forecast, in the first hour, I'll be discussing what is said to be one of the scariest tornadoes in history alongside Joplin, the 1997 Gerald tornado. And then we come back to the present with a storm that caused some killer visuals, Storm Goretti. In the second hour of the show, I'll be analyzing a storm from paradise that wiped out the world before discussing just how bad all these frequent storms have been for Ontario, as we are currently facing a road salt shortage. And, as always, I'll be ending the show with the weekly forecast, Liam's locked-in weekend forecast. See how much easier that rolls off the tongue? Don't gotta say. Liam's locked in end of the week forecast. This is why we love the Friday shows. And the Laurier exclusive news report. As for the weather recap, you know, usually after these breaks, I recap any major storms that happened over the winter break, but there's honestly been more to talk about in this week alone than the winter break had. I will note we got a bunch of lake effect systems and such over the winter break, and I know Waterloo got walloped with snow, since snow was up to my knees when I got back. I was very worried on how much snow I was going to find when I got back. I'll say that much. As for this week, though, it's been extremely chaotic within the last 7 days. I'm shocked how much has happened. Starting out over the end of last week, we had a temporary period of warming up. I know, in early January, what's going on here? We went up from your average temperatures of, you know, low single digits and some negative values, all the way up to 11 degrees on Friday, which obviously melted all the snow and ice on the ground. This was, of course, until Sunday. We saw a low pressure system that brought with it a very sharp cold front, ushering in a flash freeze of sorts, causing all the sidewalks to be slippery and icy, and so icy, I'd argue you could skate on them, because they were not treated, but more on that later. After that, our temperatures returned back to the normal, you know, single digits, negative values for 2 whole days until Wednesday. You see, our dear friend, the jet stream up in the upper atmosphere, decided it was prime time for an ice age and ushered in a polar vortex of sorts, dropping temps down to a crisp minus 20 with the wind chill, which we love. As this happened, a nice little low-pressure system swooped in Wednesday night and decided that it would be the one big storm that January always gets. And fun fact, this is the storm from overnight Wednesday into yesterday. This storm was projected to completely miss us, like just big miss, until Wednesday morning, 12 hours before the storm was supposed to happen, when every single weather model switched up and showed a winter walloping. Point is, as we all know, we got smothered in snow and campus was closed all day. Though, I didn't get my true snow day, as I had to go to an online class, because don't we all love Zoom classes? I don't know why professors would force us into a Zoom meeting, but I guess for the 5 people who really, really like that class, it's good for them. And that brings us to today, where as I'm writing this, more snow is expected today. Not much, a few centimeters, but just more, which should be fantastic since I have a film shoot to go today. That's right, folks. Your lovely host got a spot on a film set. I'll be in charge of all the props on set, and they call me the Props Master. Very cool name, I know. I figure if I can forecast a giant winter storm, I can handle a few props, you know. That's really it for the weather recap, you know. I hope you all enjoyed your snow day yesterday. Had a great week, because Lord knows I've been busy with school and film stuff and writing this episode. And I hope, most of all, that you're ready to enjoy the rest of your morning with the best weatherman on campus. And probably the only one as well, but we don't gotta mention that. Before moving into the new content, though, I want to bring up a nice family tradition for New Year's that we always do. Every time the ball drops midnight, you know, we open the back door to let the old air, or the old year, out, and open the front door to let the new year in. Now, I love this tradition. I feel like it's a symbolic, you know, send all the baggage, all the stuff from the old year out. Bring in the new year. Let's bring in a fresh new start for the new year. And if you tuned into my semester one finale, you'd know that I prepared too much content and did not get to finish my weather-aware top 5. And a Christmas present I got gives me the perfect segue into finishing my top five. See, for Christmas, I got a lot of cool stuff, but the coolest thing, to me at least, was the original 1976 pressing, or the album, of Hotel California by the Eagles. Even comes with a poster of the Eagles looking at you weirdly, especially my boy Don Felder. So, what better way to end off the recap segment than by recapping the story behind my favorite song of all time, Hotel California? You see, the Eagles were comprised of five main members at the time. You had Don Henley and Glenn Frey at the top of the band as co-leaders. They were both lead vocalists. Don Henley was also a drummer, and Glenn was sometimes on keyboards. Don Felder comes in as the lead guitarist alongside Joe Walsh, though Don Felder is the most important for today's story. Then you had Randy Meisner, but we don't gotta talk about Randy Meisner. This is going off the memory of something my dad showed me once. I think it was a video. So, could be a little rough, but Don Felder was on vacation in his Malibu house, you know, beach house, as one does, and was playing around with some ideas on his guitar, and as he was doing this, he would eventually play the opening strings, or the riff, to Hotel California. After he did, he kind of jolted up, and, you know, he went, hey, that's really good. I should record this as a demo. And after he got back, he created the demo and handed it to Don Henley and Glenn Frey under the title Mexican Reggae because of the sound of the riff, and then the song started being written. Henley and Frey were inspired by their experiences in Los Angeles and the Beverly Hills Hotel, which is the hotel on the front of the album cover, which was a focal point for their lives as they achieved success. The song became a symbolic representation of their journey and the transition from innocence to a more complex and sometimes disillusioning reality. It takes some folk elements, you know, primarily the narrative structure of the song, something folk songs love to do. You'll notice many folk songs, they love to tell a story in between their songs, throughout the song. But other than that, I consider it, you know, country rock, which is what the Eagles is, but it has a nice edge to it, I think. The song also has a huge history with the band, because you see, Don Felder was a really important player in turning the Eagles into a band that I really like. To me, personally, I think he added the harder rock edge with his style of guitar work, and essentially, he created Hotel California, including the huge guitar solo at the end with Joe Walsh. The song was such a hit and success that Felder became a third pillar, or a third leader of sorts, of the Eagles amongst Don Henley and Glenn Frey. But this also caused tension, because Don Felder started pushing for more importance, more songwriting influence, and an equal voice. Henley and Frey saw the band as theirs, so there was a huge ego battle going on there. As the band became a brand, divisions appeared, and Don Felder increasingly resented this dynamic of Henley and Frey as the gods and everyone else as a poor man. Things started escalating. A U.S. senator would thank Don Felder at a concert, and he said, thanks, I guess. Frey threatened to kill Don Felder, and then the band broke up until 1994 comes out and the Eagles reunite for Hell Freezes Over. Henley and Frey were given a bigger cut of the money, while everyone else, including Don Felder, got less. Things escalated more, and Felder would be fired. Felder says he was fired because he challenged the financial structure that made Henley and Frey very controlling and also rich, I think. Hotel California becomes the ultimate dispute of the Eagles. Every time his song is played, he gets less money than Henley and Frey because leadership was valued more than songwriting. Above all, it just sucks for me because it's my favorite song and I'll never be able to see it live properly because Don Felder is needed for, you know, the heart and soul and guitar work of the song. But the Eagles are needed for the rest of the song. So unless they come together again to perform, you'll never really get a true, proper live rendition of the song. You know, you can still see it live, but for the full experience, you need to have to see the Eagles live and sit through that until the very end for Hotel California, and then see Don Felder live and hope he plays the song, which he usually does, but still. It's just a very odd situation all around, but doesn't change the fact it's my favorite song of all time. Now you get to hear it, because we're going to go on a short break now. It's currently 10:25, minus 8, and cloudy in Waterloo, Ontario. Gonna play us into the break with the legendary and my top pick for top 5 songs, Hotel California by the Eagles, of course, on Radio Laurier. On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair. Welcome back from the break, and welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. Such a good song, right? I mean, depending on your music taste. I know some people just don't... Sorry, I thought my mic levels were off. No, some people don't really like that kind of music. Just they're not... It's just not their taste. That's fine. I love that song. You know, every verse, it's ever so slightly different. Each time getting more and more intense until the guitar solo at the very end. It's a really subtle but nice build-up. I also love the vibe the song brings. I love how the singer sounds, the instrumentals all blend together beautifully. And do I even have to mention the guitar work of Don Felder? Such an iconic and awesome solo. I won't go too long about the song like I was planning to with the finale, but I just had to bring that back to finish the top 5 off. And if you know me, I will take any chance I get to involve Hotel California with my show. I will take it. It's my favorite song. Any chance I can take, any chance I can play that song, you're going to hear that song. That's my Weather Aware guarantee. There's a chance I can play that song, you're going to hear that song. Not a lot, though. I wouldn't be too repetitive with it. I might do more of the style of, you know, more laid-back, music-based shows. I'm especially eyeing one show in particular, the one before Valentine's Day, mainly because, you know, I have, I think, 3 midterms that week, 2 of which falling on Thursday. Sorry, no. 2 midterms and a monologue performance for my acting course, directing drama. So, I need to memorize a monologue, make sure I can perform that well, and then study 2 midterms at the same time. I could, in theory, I could write maybe some content, but I'm eyeing that show maybe to do at least some more laid-back music stuff so that I can focus more on my academics. I'm not going to skip that show. You know, the show must go on. But I'm just soft-launching the idea right now. You know, just telling you guys, maybe for that February 13th show, expect less weather-based content and more music-based content. Like, it's going to be a more normal kind of morning show, I guess you can call it. Anyways, let's move on to the good stuff, the new stuff. Over the winter break, I happened to go onto a deep dive into learning some new weather terminology when I discovered a subreddit all dedicated to tornadoes. They say there's a subreddit for everything, so, you know, I should have figured it existed, but still a cool discovery, you know? I found a post asking people what they thought the scariest tornado was, and obviously, my first thought was, oh, this is fantastic content. I'm going to make note of this for when I get back from winter break so I can do some research for topics in the subreddit. It's tornadoes. I love tornadoes. They go hand in hand. And, you know, you had your usual picks, or what I call the canon ones in weather. When I say canon pick, I mean very important, influential pieces in history. So for film history, if you're looking at anything between 1969 and 2000, if you were to list a bunch of films, you'd find a lot of canon picks like Jaws, the first Star Wars. I'd say Jurassic Park's probably in there. Back to the Future is another one. The big movies. And these are the big tornadoes, pretty much. You had your El Renos, your Tri-States, your Joplins. But alongside those, you had a tornado named Gerald. You know, I never heard of this tornado. Yet at the same time, it sounded oddly familiar. So I saved it in my back pocket for today's show in case I didn't talk about it before. And after scrubbing through every single script I have for all the episodes, and yes, I keep all the scripts. I think it's cool. Nice little archive. I did not talk about Tornado Gerald, but I know the name because when I reviewed the movie Supercell a couple episodes back in season 2, the movie that definitely isn't a Twister ripoff, by the way, you can hear my review on RadioLaurier.com, because most of the episodes from the first half of season 2 are out now as archives on the website. So if you missed a show and you're looking to hear it, you want more weather aware, definitely go check out the morning show file on RadioLaurier.com. You got all my archived episodes right there. But yeah, in this movie, Supercell, the catastrophic tornado at the beginning was described as if Gerald and Joplin had a baby. So, knowing this was a lot of people's scariest tornado, and the fact it's so bad it was named in a movie, maybe not a bigger movie like Twister, but still a pretty big weather movie, I figured it would be a great topic to kick off the new year of Weather Aware with. Before discussing the cooler stuff with the disaster, though, as always, let's break down what exactly happened beforehand with a quick little meteorological synopsis. So, it's May 27th, 1997. The sequel Jurassic Park, The Lost World, had released 4 days ago, and there are a lot of other cool 1997 things happening. Of course, that's just what comes to the top of my mind. It's almost June, so there's a little bit of a warmer edge in the air. And of course, as is evident with history, May and June are prime time for tornado activity in the States. In the upper atmosphere, a low pressure area that's set in over South Dakota and Nebraska moves north, making things get a bit odd in the upper atmosphere in Texas. At the same time, a cold front extends southwest of another low pressure area from Arkansas to the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. A gravity wave was coming alongside this cold front, which, if you don't know what that is, don't worry, because I had no clue what on earth a gravity wave was. Pretty much, it's a large ripple in the atmosphere that disperses energy all around, which means they help intensify thunderstorms. It's a really big term, I know. It's a scary-sounding term, but it's simple. Pretty much, whenever you see clouds in the shape of these thick lines repeating over and over again, that's a gravity wave. Very important here to note, it is not to be confused with a gravitational wave, which would be a rip in the space-time continuum. That, unfortunately, does not intensify thunderstorms, but rather it would cause a black hole. And no one wants that. So, you have a low-pressure area setting in over Texas, which leads to a more chaotic environment in weather on its own, topped with a cold front moving in. You're bound to get some stormy weather. You also have an unstable warm air mass in the area, and just like my two dogs when they're playing, a cold front and a warm air mass does not get along, and if they're together long enough, you're going to start seeing some fighting. A lot of it. Though, in this case, fighting means thunderstorms and not my dogs making really ugly, snarly faces at each other. You'll notice that in almost every case that we get a bad storm here, it's usually tied together nicely, wrapped up with a bow, with a cold front. The gravity waves helped intensify the cells that would form, and this cell would include the one to spawn Gerald. Many cells formed that day, but the one that would spawn Gerald formed just before noon in McLennan County, moving southwest into the unstable air mass formed by the aforementioned conditions. A tornado watch had been issued for eastern Texas and western Louisiana. The cell would spawn a couple brothers and sisters that, you know, they died off a little quickly before the cell moved west towards Gerald and Salado. It showed signs of rapid rotation. In anticipation to this, the National Weather Service would issue a tornado warning for Austin and San Antonio for Williamson County, which included Gerald. The cell would form some funnel clouds, but none would touch down, except for one. At around 3:40 p.m. local time, a tornado would touch down in Williamson County, just 4.8 kilometers north of Gerald. This would come to be known as the Gerald Tornado, or, as some called it, Dead Man Walking. I found out about this in research. I have no clue how I never saw it before, but apparently it's super, super iconic in meteorology. Or weather communities as a whole, I guess you could call it that way. There's a photo of Gerald that was taken mid-tornado genesis, which I know, very scary word, but it's just a fancy science gibberish word for the process of a tornado forming. So it was taken as the tornado was being formed. See, Gerald was a multi-vortex tornado, meaning it had a main vortex, but it also had some sub-vortexes. This picture had debris surrounding the tornado, but you can clearly make out three vortexes. The main one, a sub-vortex coming off of its left side, and a third one trying to form on the top left. So it's just coming down. Now, what's really cool about this photo is that it looks like the Grim Weeper. Not Weeper. It looks like the Grim Reaper walking. The second sub-vortex on the bottom left takes the appearance of a leg, and the third looks like a scythe. I know it's hard to explain, but it's a really cool photo. Look it up when I go on break. It's awesome. It actually popularized it as a term for these kind of multi-vortex tornadoes that have an illusion of looking like legs. The Gerald one is the only one I've seen that has a scythe, though, so I guess you can consider Gerald Dead Man Walking Prime. Anywho, our dead man decided to start walking towards the Interstate 35, a highway, as it underwent some rapid intensification from a landspout, which is a weak tornado, into a powerhouse of a monster of a tornado, growing in width and length. Highway patrol stopped traffic, anticipating the tornado to go through the traffic, only for it to start messing with them by going parallel to the interstate. So this means instead of going through it, hurting a lot of cars and probably people inside of them, it would move southwest and grow to such a size that it was difficult to determine how big it was, but it meant no one would get hurt on the highway, which is good. Awesome stuff. You know, I'll note this, the fact that it grew to such a size that it was so difficult to determine how big it was. Probably has something to do with the fact it was 1997 and the technology wasn't specifically all there. But who's to say? Maybe it did grow to such a size that even if we did have the technology, we wouldn't know. Who's to say? This tornado was so strong, it stripped pavement 3 inches thick from the road, collapsed a culvert plant, which is apparently a place that makes drainage pipes and that kind of stuff, and absolutely demolished a recycling plant, leaving only the foundation standing with a few twisted and bent metal beams remaining. In an ironic and twisted fate, there was a group of people that sheltered in their mobile homes. As one would think, mobile homes aren't the best place to shelter, so they all went to shelter into a house. The tornado decided to hit the house dead on, obliterating it, while the trailer park was only sideswiped and minor damage occurred. After this ridiculous activity, the tornado turned slightly around 3:48 p.m. and it would enter the Double Creek Estates at a violent EF5 intensity, and it would grow to its maximum width of 1.2 kilometers. It would begin to destroy everything in its path, homes and structures alike, as it moved to the northeastern edge of a housing development. What's really cool about it is that a recovered clock from the debris or the aftermath of these estates allowed people to sync up footage to have a real-time understanding of the events, as since this clock was recovered, it would stop ticking the moment it was taken off the wall, which would have been the moment the tornado came. I think that's kind of cool. All homes on Double Creek Drive and in other parts of the subdivision, some well-built and probably bolted, were completely swept away, leaving only bare concrete foundation slabs behind. And the remaining foundations of several homes in the direct path of the tornado had their plumbing ripped away. In the hardest hit areas of Double Creek Estates, homes were so thoroughly obliterated that there was virtually no recoverable debris left behind. And what debris was left behind had been finally turned into small fragments and dispersed over a wide area. Grass was completely scoured from lawns throughout the neighborhood, and nearby grassy fields also sustained extreme ground scurrying of up to 18 inches. This is also fascinating because it led to the damage path being very studied, as you could visibly see where the tornado went as it left behind a path of scoured soil. In total, around 38 structures were destroyed. Cars were hardly recognizable and thrown hundreds of meters away, and it caused a total of 10 to 20 million in damages for Double Creek Estates alone. After exiting the estates, it would move into a cedar tree forest, and with not much to destroy and a lot of factors leading to it intensifying, it would rapidly weaken and dissipate at 3:53 p.m. local time. It lasted for 13 minutes and traveled 8.2 kilometers. Within minutes after the tornado's impact, emergency management, police, and other volunteers began search and rescue operations in Jarrow. Relief operations, which covered 211 homes and persons damaged or wounded in the tornado, cost an estimated $250,000. That was 1997 dollars. But thankfully, community donations covered at least $200,000 of that. The tornado would knock down power in Jarrow, which effectively stunted communications between emergency services and residents. Cell phones were not functional in the slightest, and families of affected residents became increasingly concerned due to an inability to communicate. During the emergency response in the areas, emergency services almost drove past Double Creek Estates, unaware that houses had stood there. This means that the Double Creek Estates subdivision was so badly damaged that people thought, nothing's there. There's no point looking at that, because there is nothing standing. If you thought the story couldn't get any crazier, here's a name you probably know. Then-Governor of Texas, former President of the United States, and the lead on the War on Terror, George W. Bush, declared Williamson County a disaster area, later stating during a visit to Darrell on May 28th that it was the worst tornado I've ever seen. He would later request federal aid for Williamson and Bell counties. But FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, elected not to provide federal aid, saying that the contributions from private and state sources would be good enough. In total, 40 family residences were swept away, causing $40 million in total damages. Out of 131 residents in Double Creek Estates, thankfully only 27 people died. It's just shocking, since most of the houses were just decimated. just destroyed. Where was I? Sorry, I lost my pace here. I won't go into the manner of the deaths, of course, but all I'll say it was that it was a very violent tornado. But what I will talk about is that there was a survivor. There were survivors, plural, but one specifically was holed up in a bathtub, and he was flung several hundred feet from his house onto a road and somehow survived that. That's a miracle. So, yeah, that was Gerald. The last, I could be wrong, but who knows? I'm pretty sure this is the last of the quote-unquote canon picks for bad tornadoes, you know? We've discussed El Reno, Joplin, Gerald, both tri-state tornadoes, all of which are devastating, record-breaking, and also really cool-sounding tornadoes. And I can't think of any other like canon picks, per se, so I'm going to say Gerald was the last big tornado to talk about. It was a gruesome and terrifying tornado, sweeping houses from their foundation, and it would rightfully earn the name and the title Dead Man Walking. We're going to go on another short break now. It is currently 10:51, minus 7 with a crisp minus 12 wind chill, and cloudy. As always with these shows, I'm telling you, there's something about my shows. It's usually always cloudy on the day of my show. Don't know what it is, but it's something in the weather in Waterloo, Ontario. I'm going to play us into the break with a nice and mellow song that matches the vibe after talking about a storm like this, I think. Imagine by John Lennon on Radio Laurier.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome back from the break. Welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. Weird thing about John Lennon, or the Beatles in general, I find that I enjoy them a lot on their individual releases, but when they're in the band, like, I much prefer their singles over the Beatles themselves. The Beatles have some fantastic picks, but Hot Weather Aware take, I think they're a little overrated. In the last month or so, there's actually been, you know, a lot of weather-related news. We aren't the only ones with an active weather pattern, after all. Everywhere in the world is facing some kind of weather incident, it seems at least. I saw stories of floods happening, I believe one in LA after some kind of winter storm, freak snowstorms, and a wildfire in Argentina amongst it all, caused by an Israeli tourist, which I will cover once we have more information on those wildfires. Most recently of all these weird weather stories is a UK-based one, as all good weather stories are. As we've learned, we love our UK-based weather stories, don't we? As Storm Goretti, or Storm Eli in Germany, made its grand entrance as the first major quote-unquote storm of 2026. If you are just tuning in as a first-time listener, didn't know, quote-unquote storms in the UK are their form, not hurricanes per se, but they don't call it Hurricane Goretti. They call them usually Storm Goretti. It's interesting how they name the storms. They're pretty much just name storms. That's actually a great way to put it. Don't know why I didn't just open with that. They're name storms. So, first major quote-unquote storm of 2026. I think that deserves to be the first entry in the weekly weather news of 2026 on Weather Aware. How did it form? What are the impacts? You can expect answers to all those silly town names as we love in UK-based weather stories and more in this segment. Our story starts on January 6th. A low-pressure system resides over the Atlantic, and out of nowhere, the jet stream pushes it eastward towards Europe. The jet stream's been a little mean lately. It's just been pushing a lot of bad weather towards everywhere. It's not nice. It's not a nice jet stream. As the system passed over to the northern, cooler side of the jet stream, this caused something called a period of explosive cyclogenesis. And this is when a low-pressure system deepens by around 45 millibars in 24 hours, which in simpler terms means that the storm intensified, and the lower pressure you get and the more intense a storm, the more intense the pressure drops, the more intense the storm is. And the quicker a low-pressure system deepens, the stronger the winds get as well. Storm Gretti would become a force of nature hurling towards Europe. And the Met Office, the meteorological office, caught wind of this. On the afternoon of the 8th of January 2026, the Met Office would issue a red wind warning for parts of western Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. What did I say? I told you there'd be silly names. With peak gusts of up to 130 to 160 kilometers per hour expected. An orange snow warning was also in place for Wales, Midlands, South Yorkshire, where 10 to 15 centimeters of snow was expected widely, with up to 30 centimeters on high ground, which would be Wales and the Peak District. Just saying, we got a worse snowstorm out here, so why wasn't that storm named? It would be cool if we could name our storms. Just saying. Rural communities were expected to be cut off. Power cuts and mobile signal loss were expected, and in fact, they were likely. A yellow rain warning was also enforced for East Anglia and Lincolnshire, where 20 to 40 millimeters of rain falling on frozen ground presented a high risk of surface water flooding, spray on roads, and localized property flooding. The Meteorological Office of Jersey, not New Jersey, but if New Jersey exists, would this be Old Jersey? Who's to say? Issued a red wind warning for the island as they forecasted peak winds of 180 kilometers an hour. Personally, the best part about this is that I don't have to explain UK weather alerts anymore because Canada now uses the exact same system. I think it's weird. I have my thoughts and opinions about the new weather warning system. I think it's a little confusing. I think it's a little unnecessary. And it's very evident they don't know how to use it because they were very, very late yesterday with issuing an orange level snowfall warning. That was supposed to be a very rough and bad snowfall, and for the majority of that system, when it mattered most, it was a yellow snowfall warning, which is saying, "Oh, don't worry about it. This is common. You don't gotta worry. It might be a little bad, but you don't gotta worry about it." When an orange snowfall warning would have been telling you, maybe don't go outside, maybe don't try to travel. It's not common to see this much snow. Stay safe. I don't know. I have my thoughts, but I won't get into that right now. As Storm Gretti finally hit the mainland in the UK, a wind gust of 159 kilometers per hour was recorded at the St. Mary's Airport on the Scilly Isles. A National Coast Watch institution recorded 198 kilometers per hour at Separate Point in Padstow, and an emergency alert was sent to hundreds of thousands across the southwest. Around 50,000 homes and businesses in Cornwall, Devon, and the Isles of Scilly. If you were wondering, by the way, that is spelled S-C-I-L-L-Y, but the C is silent, were without power. During the height of Storm Gretti, rail services were suspended between Plymouth and Penzance, including all branch lines throughout Cornwall serving Guinness Lake, Newquay, Falmouth Docks, and St. Ives. Additionally, flooding completely halted all trains between Liskeard and Loo. The operator advised passengers not to attempt travel on these routes as, quote-unquote, dangerous road conditions prevented the provision of rail replacement transport. My parents went there to the UK, not in these areas, not to the Scilly Isles, of course, but they told me how much rail services was used over there in, you know, Ireland, Europe, like the UK as a whole. I keep forgetting how big trains and rail services are out there. It's huge. If you've never been, definitely try to go. I want to go there at least once, especially to Ireland. I hear it's magnificent out there. Storm Grady's snowfall was described as a once-in-a-decade event for the Midlands as the storm collided with the cold air in place. Heavy, wet snow caused significant disruption, breaking down power lines and leaving approximately 15,000 homes in the Midlands and Wales without electricity. Accumulations of 10 to 15 centimeters were reported widely across the orange warning area, with up to 30 centimeters settling in across higher ground in the Peak District and Wales, just as the warning said. This resulted in the closure of over 500 schools across Scotland and the Midlands, the suspension of runways at Birmingham and East Midlands airports, and hazardous drifting that has left several rural communities entirely cut off. This is a big name coming up. Good Lord. In the Ballywicks of Guernsey and Jersey, they rhyme there. They rhyme. They sustained a magnitude of damage levels caused by high winds. A block of flats housing 50 people were evacuated in the outskirts of St. Peterport, Guernsey, after a portion of the roof collapsed. Thankfully, though, no injuries were reported. On January 9th, the states of Guernsey closed all public and private schools in the island following damage sustained to the buildings and the conditions of the roads, meaning it was not deemed safe to travel. Over 112 trees were downed over the island, restricting passage, especially around the higher parishes, which are smaller little towns in the south of the island. In Jersey, a major incident was declared as a result of the storm. Almost 130 kilometer per hour wind gusts were recorded locally, with reports of disruption to utilities in parts of the east. Some properties in St. Ewan experienced brief power cuts after storm-related issues, and a small number of homes in Gorey, Jersey temporarily lost water supplies. Germany saw orange warnings in place for a severe winter storm, including heavy snowfall, freezing rain, and strong winds across northern and central Germany. Wind gusts of up to 90 to 110 kilometers per hour were recorded along the North Sea coast, with lower but still disruptive gusts inland. Storm Grady's arrival brought snow accumulations of up to about 15 centimeters, or 6 inches, if it sounds any bigger, in northern areas, with the risk of dangerous ice and drifting snow, prompting school closures in major cities like Hamburg and Bremen, as well as disruptions to public transport and the postponement, and this is my favorite name of today's segment, of local Bundesliga matches. And if you were wondering what Bundesliga is and where that wonderful word comes from, it's the German men's football league. To clarify, it's the one where you kick the ball, not throw it. It's our version of soccer. The storm would also cause major travel disruptions. Long-distance train services across northern Germany were canceled, warning passengers against travel as tracks were blocked by snow and ice. Hamburg Airport canceled around 40 flights, roughly, amid hazardous weather conditions. The storm also affected industrial operations, with companies like Volkswagen temporarily halting production due to the severe weather. In the aftermath of the storm, there's been a shocking amount of criticism in Cornwall, of all places, because it wouldn't be a true UK weather story without some form of political scandal, now would it? As of Tuesday, 2 days ago, there are still close to 400 homes without power, while authorities are dealing with over 1,000 uprooted trees. West Cornwall's Liberal Democrat MP Andrew George has been extremely vocal in calling for a national emergency response to help communities across Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly after the massive devastation caused by the storm. He has been critical of the government for granting such a response in East Grinstead, but not in Cornwall, which was more badly affected. Kent's council has declared a major incident over water cut to homes, about the same number. Sorry, I thought I skipped a beat there. About the same number as Cornwall, but without the power loss and other devastation that has hit Cornwall. Turns out that Cornwall has also barely been covered in the news over there. And since Cornwall is a smaller community and not a bigger area like, say, London, people are unaware of the impacts. One person, or one local, was quoted saying, and this is very British, I'll say that right now. And he said, oh, that will all be sorted out by now, I should. Sorry, there I skipped a beat. One person was quoted saying, I mentioned to a local chap how lucky we were not to have been affected by the storm in Cambridgeshire and how bad it's been down there. He said, the chap, she said, oh, that will all be sorted out by now, I should think. When I said it wasn't, he seemed to doubt me, but there's been no national coverage that I've seen since Friday. Like the rest of the country isn't interested, for which I apologize. Very, what's the word here? Very formal, I'll say that. There's a better word for it. You can tell they know their English. It's a specific kind of English out there. Of course, the spokespeople of the people under flame have nothing to say except for the most basic PR train. Our thoughts are with those affected responses, which is just very unfortunate to see. No, I just thought that was interesting to note. You know, you gotta love a good weather political issue. We all do, don't we? The last cool thing I saw about the storm was the sky turning pink, like how it looks in the upside down in Stranger Things. Obviously, this caused a lot of worrying and speculation, but the answer is pretty cut and dry, which I gotta be honest. Kind of a letdown. I was kind of hoping for a cool weather phenomenon to turn the sky pink. You see, Birmingham City's football stadium glows pink at night, and with cloud cover and falling snow, this meant the sky could be more reflective, and Birmingham City's St. Andrew's Stadium was shown as the source of light. Atmospheric conditions with low cloud and even during snow can make the sky a little more reflective and show a glow of street lighting, buildings, and even purple lights from football stadiums. So while it wasn't the cause of some, you know, super cool supernatural thing or weather phenomenon, the end result made the whole sky turn pink. Trust, like, it's real. The sky was pink. I'm about to go on break, so when I go on break, definitely look up some imagery if you want to, because it is very cool looking. And that brings us to the end of Storm Greddy. Just about everything you need for a good weather story. Epic displays of weather, nasty impacts, a touch of political issues, and an oddity of a pink sky. We're going to go on a short break now. It's currently 11:11. Make a wish. I think it's 11:11. Make a wish. Or is it 1:11? It's got to be 11:11. If it's 11:11, make a wish. -7 feels like -12 with that crisp wind chill and cloudy in Waterloo, Ontario. I think it's a bit fitting that the sky started turning pink and looking straight out of Stranger Things. Since this storm turned the UK upside down and inside out. But as long as the sun continues to shine, everything should work out eventually. Gonna play us into the break with Upside Down by Diana Ross on Radio Laurier. Welcome back from the break, and welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. If you're just tuning in, that was Upside Down by Diana Ross. Absolute banger. My buddy of mine, the one that gave me a fantastic emergency phone call about if it was going to snow the next day, great guy, has been recommending me a bunch of shows, and personally, almost too many for my liking. He keeps pestering me about it, so over the winter break, as I mentioned earlier, I knocked out a couple of shows off that list. Pluribus and Stranger Things were amongst them. And Paradise, which is the one we're going to be talking about today. Going into it, did not think I was able to talk about this on a radio show, but one episode in particular, wow, immediately. Well, I'll save that for soon. You'll hear it soon. Don't worry. Paradise is a political thriller about a post-apocalyptic world where only the elite, highest of the high in society, were saved. Inside a mountain resides a perfect idea of what the average American suburban town looks like, alongside it involving a president and his secret service. The entire concept is to make the underground city look and feel as real as possible, even involving a fake sky system with a fake sun. My only question, is there a fake weather system? Maybe season 2 will tell us. Who knows? You know, it sounds like a cool concept, I know, and it is. I'm not going to go into specifics because it is a relatively new show and a new season comes out next month, but all I'll say is that it's a political thriller and involves weather. My friend did not mention that this disaster that caused the world to crumble and caused this disaster scenario was a weather event. He should know if he wanted me to watch the show. Should have told me, hey, there's a cool weather thing going on. I actually only found out because I was shown a clip. I think it was over the winter break. I was shown a clip of Paradise of this event happening. I was thinking, this is Paradise? Why didn't he tell me this? And for that, I say I hope he does not go into marketing because he cannot pitch things well in the slightest. When I saw this, you know, my first thought was that it was really well done, and the whole episode is some of the best TV I've seen as of recent. But secondly, I immediately thought that it would be a great thing to talk about on Weather Aware. If you want to go into the show completely blind, maybe come back in 15 minutes, but I will be discussing a minor, very, 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 very minor spoiler, but it's not really relevant to the plot itself for the most part as to how the disaster happened, because most of the show is, it's kind of about the aftermath of the storm, and it's more so focusing on the political aspects of things. So it's not too big of a spoiler for a plot thing, but just putting that out there, and just in case you don't want to know specifics, you know. We are no stranger to these apocalypse, end of the world weather disasters on Weather Aware. 2012, the day after, not after tomorrow, the day before tomorrow, Noah's Ark. We're practically pros at this stuff, and Paradise is a perfect chance to apply everything we know about disaster scenarios, because in the show, it's pretty much one gigantic amalgamation of every possible disaster scenario or weather disastrous trope that you can think of. I joke on the show by calling some storms, you know, these super awful mega storms of doom and whatnot, but this is doomsday in Paradise. It's a lot, but thankfully, we have a great summary of the storm given by the show itself. I'm not sure I have my volume for sounds, like clips and music, up a little higher than it is normally. I'm going to judge it based on how my headphones sound with the clip. Halfway through the clip, just because of how the show was edited, it gets a little quieter, so I'm going to turn the valve up a little bit. So, if it's quiet, my apologies. I'm going to make it as loud as possible without hurting my eardrums. So, take a listen. Sorry, folks. not wanting to play here.
This is our...
All right, we got it.
This is our continuing coverage of the situation that started in Antarctica and is causing unprecedented destruction and chaos around the globe. Here's what we do know right now. Just over 3 hours ago, what scientists are calling a massive mega caldera or super volcano erupted under the Antarctic ice sheet, expelling millions of tons of ash into the atmosphere. The force of the explosion shattered large portions of the ice shelf, instantly melting trillions of gallons of water and triggering a tsunami that is hurtling northward at nearly 600 miles an hour. Most disturbingly, some reports indicate the wave may be as high as 300 feet. In an unprecedented move, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has put all coastal areas of the United States on a tsunami watch with estimated landfall at Key West in 2 hours and the nation's capital in 5.
Like I said, it's a good mix of everything. And just in case you couldn't hear, it was pretty much saying a supervolcano erupted under Antarctica, exploded lots of ash into the air, melted all the ice in Antarctica, a lot of ice in Antarctica, which caused a tsunami that's hurtling towards the states. It's pretty much just a giant ring, essentially, of a 300-foot tsunami going from one end of the world, Antarctica, to the other end. One of the poles, I don't know if it's north or south pole, but it's one of the poles. I know that much. So, yeah, a supervolcano, a massive tsunami, and there's a few smaller bits later on, like an earthquake, but that's a separate thing, not really relevant to this. This is just about as bad as a weather event could get, honestly. But the question here, could this actually happen? Today on my movies and TV segment, we asked the question that apparently some people actually asked. Could the disaster in paradise really happen? Is there actually trouble in paradise, or do we have nothing to worry about? The answer is actually not as clear-cut as you think it might be. It's not a simple yes or no. Some aspects of it are possible, and some aren't. It's a yes and a no. Let's get into it. First off, supervolcanoes do exist. I know it sounds like a very fake sci-fi term, but they are real. If you didn't know, there's one right in the middle of the states. The Yellowstone Caldera, or the Yellowstone Supervolcano, also acts as a sleeping giant. And if erupted, it would send the world into a volcanic winter and kill a majority of the states in the United States. We in Ontario wouldn't immediately be killed or anything, but we'd absolutely be at a high risk if we stayed in Stalin, Ontario for a while afterwards. We'd have to evacuate if this were to happen. But it's not likely to erupt anytime soon. As I discussed last season on Weather Aware, it's archived on RadioLaurier.com if you want to check that out. Every time a supervolcano erupts in history, it has changed the climate, posed extinction risks for species, and worst of all, it can shut down airports. No. I was getting information from Google for supervolcanoes about impacts and stuff like that. Just quick refresher. And I found it funny that the first thing it says for impact is that airports could get shut down. You know, not a potential extinction level event, not climate getting permanently changed, nah. Gotta save the airports. The airports might close. That would be awful. Anyways, point I'm trying to make is that it would absolutely be something that disrupts society. The show gets that right. So, we've established supervolcanoes existing. Next up, the next step here, can a supervolcano cause a tsunami? Absolutely. While not supervolcanic, there are examples of volcanoes, normal ones, causing tsunamis. A recent one as well. In 2022, there was an underwater eruption that caused tsunamis above to 49 feet in Oceania. It's absolutely possible for it to happen. Mega tsunamis also exist. The next big piece here. The biggest one in history was in 1958 in Lituya Bay, where a height of 1,720 feet was recorded. For reference, that is about 100 feet short of the CN Tower. So, you know, yeah, very cool stuff, very real stuff, but that's about all there is for possibilities. Honestly, a supervolcano could absolutely erupt and cause a mega tsunami, but everything else about the storm is thankfully practically impossible. The mega tsunami itself is absolutely possible, especially for a height of 300 feet, but it is a local thing. The show is saying that this supervolcano in Antarctica caused a ring of 300 feet tsunamis to go from Antarctica to the North Pole or South Pole. One of the poles went pretty much Antarctica to whatever the other end of the globe is, completely undisrupted. The truth of the matter is that it's virtually impossible for tsunamis to be uniformed into a ring of 300 feet and keep that height as it traverses. Tsunamis tend to lose energy as they spread, meaning they lose height. At some point along that journey, it's absolutely going to lose its edge and likely start calming down. I can see a few cities absolutely getting hurt by a theoretical ring of 300 feet tsunamis, but my point is that it would die off at some point. Next up, the supervolcano itself. I think it's worth mentioning first that a supervolcano in Arctica and Antarctica does not exist. The one from the show is a completely made-up fictional supervolcano. So don't worry about a possible supervolcano in Antarctica. No science, no research, no nothing suggests that. You don't gotta worry about a thing. The main issue with the supervolcano is more so the timing of everything. You see, if a massive supervolcano erupted hours ago, as the clip said, it would not immediately melt these ice caps. It's wouldn't cause all this chaos immediately that the show is saying. It would happen over the span of a few months. The whole thing about the ice caps melting also would not happen immediately because it would take a long, long time for all of that to melt. It'd definitely melt some ice, absolutely, just not all of it, immediately. There's also something to mention about the tsunami, the mega tsunami. There's a part where it reaches a city and there's a broadcast going on and this tsunami sends out these massive sound waves that shatter windows and pierce our eardrums badly. Tsunamis don't do that. Since they move water and not air, it's pretty much impossible for it to generate a sound wave like that. So the bottom line here is that Paradise takes science and essentially exaggerates it. A supervolcano could absolutely erupt, and it would definitely cause a volcanic winter and a lot of other problems, but it would not cause all those problems immediately. It'd happen over the course of a few months. It could also absolutely cause a mega tsunami, just not a ring of them that keep the same height from one end of the globe to another. It has a lot of good messaging about climate-caused disasters and how people might have been the cause of it in the show, but truth is that this disaster scenario could not happen in real life. And if it did, it'd be a really scaled-down version of it. I think the most realistic part of this is that world leaders would send nukes out to each other in response to this catastrophe. That I see happening. All that being said, it's a really, really cool show. You know, I think this episode, which is episode 7, is the best one. It gives a real-time breakdown following the president and his staff actively working through what to do about the conflict. And best of all, it's an actually good president with good morals and values. That's probably the most fictional part of the show. It's probably the best disaster scenario scene I've seen in a while. You know, the effects, especially for a TV show, are also fantastic in the scene. Surprisingly better than some of the movies I've reviewed on the show, believe it or not. I know. Sounds ridiculous. Sounds crazy. What are you talking about? It's a TV show. But I guess that's just a bad part of the overuse of CGI in the modern age of Hollywood. Let's try to go back to practical effects at some point. I can definitely recommend the show to you guys. It's captivating. It's thrilling. It's a good show. And season 2 comes out sometime in February. Might be a good thing to do for reading week. Just saying. Just putting that out there. Because of our late start today, the stupid roads, we're not going to go on a break right now, but I will tell you the weather anyways. It is currently 11:32, minus 6, crisp minus 11 wind chill, and it is saying that it is snowing right now. Let me check my radar for that. I cannot confirm nor deny that, but the sky has turned that weird white color the sky turns when it's snowing. So, it looks like a band of snow was there, but it has since passed. So, nothing to worry about for now. A keyword for now. Moving on to the next topic, because I'd much rather talk about something interesting like a road salt shortage over play another song. But if we, for some reason, have time remaining for another song at the end of the show, I'll play the song I was going to play. I know today's show, you know, it's been a lot more me talking more than usual. Very content heavy, especially now. But I feel like this next thing is very topical and it's a nice story to fit in. It's a short one. Don't worry, we're almost at the forecast. The other day, I was walking over to the Farrah's Market near City Pizza, and as I was walking over there, I probably almost slipped a dozen times. I'm sure everyone's aware of the city of Waterloo, or at least the campus area, from what I can gather, has failed to salt the sidewalks, resulting in an icy disaster waiting to happen. Full sidewalks are just absolutely smothered in ice. So much so, I could skate down the sidewalks. And this is especially evident with this storm. Lots of black ice on the roads. I actually finally slipped. That was fun. I saw someone slip on the way as I was walking over to the station this morning. So, it's a very big issue going on. But before getting your pitchforks and assuming it's the city's fault like I did, hold on. Believe it or not, it's not entirely the city's fault. That active track of weather we've been having, where it's just constant snowstorms or sleet or freezing rain or something, that's been adding up. And it's been so frequent that there's a province-wide road salt shortage. So much salt was being used up that we are out of it. And it's a big reason why I was anxious for yesterday's system, because roads and sidewalks cannot be treated. And it leads to a very unsafe environment where we are raw-dogging the roads and sidewalks for raw-dogging a winter storm. No protection. And as they say, you need protection. So, what exactly is going on with the salt? Well, as I said, there is just way too much storm activity going on for the salt to keep up. In Guelph, for example, the average precipitation totals in November and December are around 40 millimeters of rain and 10 centimeters of snow. However, Guelph has experienced above average levels of precipitation, with November and December receiving 104 millimeters of rain and 30 centimeters of snow. Their crews are running at full capacity, and there's just simply a shortage. It's so bad that one of the largest underground salt mines say that they can't keep up with the demand. The VP of operations at the salt mine located in Goderich. Yes, that Goderich in Cottage County. That's always on the world maps in NHL hockey tournaments and stuff. I say that because I have an inside joke about Goderich for the few people listening. Says that it's the high demand that's causing a lot more noise around than really what the capabilities are at Goderich Mine. Because we're running at full capacity and we've got crews running 7 days a week. So when you got high demand within weeks instead of spread out over a couple of months, that's what they're seeing now. And that's why there's a shortage. That's a direct quote from the VP of Operations from earlier. The same one. Now, this isn't being affected everywhere per se. You know, places like Wellington County claim they haven't been affected. But we in Waterloo Kitchener are absolutely being affected by this. I think this is especially important to discuss now more than ever after the temperatures plummeted yesterday, ushering us into an era where we cannot rely on warm temperatures to melt the icy sidewalks. As we face a salt shortage, it's worth asking, how can we deal with these storms? Not like Mother Nature is going to wait for more salt. Luckily, we don't have to wait, because there are a few alternatives that you can use alone, or even with the remaining road salt you may have, that work very well. First off, and you gotta be open-minded about these, keep that in mind, pickle juice. In 2024, a group of Quebec students from John Abbott College won a green innovation challenge as they tested out pickle juice as a way to melt ice from sidewalks, streets, and walkways. With the aid of some cafeteria staff, they were able to collect enough pickle juice to put their ideas to the test. And, after a bit of waiting for snow, they had a successful trial run. The initial test showed the snow that fell was easier to remove compared to the snow around it, but there was no ice formation in the area during the testing phase, where the pickle juice was. Next up, molasses. It's a more lesser-known one, but at least one Ontario municipality has also used molasses in a salt brine mixture to treat roadways before a storm. According to LE Construction and Maintenance in Alberta, molasses acts as a stabilizer so the salt and water in the brine do not separate. It allows better adhesion to pavement surfaces and is less corrosive to vehicles than salt. Molasses is less fibrous than beets and does not plug up equipment as much. It's also said to smell like cookies. You know, I'm not sure how true that is, but you know, if you know firsthand, do please feel free to let me know if molasses smell like cookies. And lastly, but not leastly, beet brine or beet juice. Beet juice can be used alone or combined with road salt to improve efficiency. It doesn't melt the ice alone, but it needs to be mixed with salt to form a brine solution that becomes sticky and improves the salt efficiency during lower temperatures. This one has a burnt coffee smell, apparently, so between this and molasses, I'd say go with molasses if you care about the smell. There's actually a petition in Ottawa to use beet juice on roadways instead of salt. See, traditional road salt is causing from the temperature of the Rideau Canal water to rise, preventing the canal from freezing adequately, actively messing up their environment. There's also cheese brine, which, if beet brine is beet juice, I don't like the idea of cheese brine. Not one bit. So, next time you're figuring out how to salt your driveway amongst the shortage, definitely consider some of those alternatives. Used in combination with road salt leads to a devastating combo that's bound to get rid of any ice or snow standing in your way. See, it's a short story, but a good one, and it's much better than hearing a song. Get to hear my lovely voice. And even if it's a short story, as they say, it's not about size. Let's go straight into the forecast and conclusion. The weather right now is -6, feels like -11, and cloudy in Waterloo, Ontario. It is currently 11:40 a.m. I know it's sad. We're at the last part of the show. Time went by fast, didn't it? We have 19 minutes now of the show, but we got a lot to cover. So, let's just get right into it. And there's nothing to be upset about, because next week I'll be right here, same time, same place, on Fridays. The best schedule possible. Just saying. So, moving on to the weekly forecast. As I always say, nothing is 100% with the future forecast, hence why I'm only giving a basic overview. Especially for the latter these days, it is subject to and is likely going to change. If you're looking for relief from this cold, the only place you'll find that is somewhere in the south. Because out here, when it comes to the cold, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Monday, January 19th, you're looking at a high of minus 11, a low of minus 18, a risk of flurries, but otherwise cloudy. Tuesday, January 20th, how are we already in late January? What? It sees a high of minus 14, a low of minus 15, and it'll be cloudy. Wednesday, January 21st, we have a high of minus 7, a low of minus 11, possibly a few centimeters of snow, but stay posted to local weather services for that closer on the date, but otherwise cloudy. Thursday, January 22nd, not a week from now, has a high of minus 8, a low of minus 13, and cloudy. And Friday, January 23rd, a new addition to the weekly forecast, and that is a week from now, sees a high of minus 6, a low of minus 12, a risk of flurries, but otherwise cloudy. Moving into Liam's locked-in forecast for the weekend. For today, we have a high of minus 4, a low of minus 13, a risk of snow, but otherwise cloudy. This morning, we started out with a crisp minus 18 with the wind chill at 8 a.m., so you can imagine how fun that walk to the station was. It was cloudy. And those clouds are expected to linger for the majority of the day. As we move into the afternoon, it's forecasted for a snow system to move in after a winter walloping yesterday. It'll hold for most of the day and roughly 5 centimeters, 4-ish likely, possibly 5 is expected. Temperatures will linger around the minus 13 mark with that wind chill. Things stay relatively the same for the evening, but as we move into the night, things start to warm up. Yes. It'll be minus 8 with the wind chill, which is better than minus 13, and cloudy at 10 p.m. Tomorrow, you're looking at a high of minus 1, a low of minus 17, and cloudy. We wake up tomorrow to a crisp minus 7 with the wind chill. Not too bad, considering our Arctic temps for the last day or two. Clouds show up in the morning, and those clouds are expected to linger throughout most of the day. Small risk of flurries as we move into the afternoon, but nothing to worry about. Those temperatures will slowly get colder throughout the afternoon, moving into the evening, as by 5 p.m. it'll be minus 11 with the wind chill. Things start to amp up, though, a bit with those temperatures seen by our lovely minus 17 wind chill at 10 p.m. On Sunday, you're looking at a high of minus 7, a low of minus 18, and mostly cloudy. Sunday sees much of the same with those Arctic wind chills as you wake up to temps hovering around the minus 18 mark. Clouds will roll in and linger throughout most of the day. As we move into the afternoon, things will briefly warm up to a minus 16 with the wind chill and linger throughout the afternoon. By the evening, things stay at around minus 15 with the wind chill before going right back up to minus 17 with the wind chill at 10 p.m. How about a quick overview for my lovely Mississauga listeners? All I need to say is enjoy those temperatures, because for what they are, they're great. You're looking at a high of 2 tomorrow, plus 2, but other than that, it's your average January weather. Lows hovering around minus 8. Today you can expect a high of minus 2, low of minus 3, and risk of snow, roughly 3 centimeters. So, doesn't sound too pleasant, but compared to our Ice Age in Waterloo. Sounds like a nice summer vacation. So, overall, it's what you can expect for an active January. A polarizing experience of wind chilly days and possible snow. Definitely try to stay warm this week and bundle up. You know, that means coats, hats, sweaters, and whatever else you can think of to stay warm. If you want to stay warm, I have a suggestion. Definitely try listening to Hotel California to get some nice, sweet, warm desert vibes. Moving on to the Laurier exclusive news reports. These are coming in fresh from the Instagram account. These are new posts. We're having another talent show. Brace for impact. Oh, no. So, we're having another talent show. Talent show auditions are live. Do you have a talent you want to show off? Send in your audition videos to ateam@wlu.ca. Once again, if you want to audition for a talent show, you send off your audition video to ateam@wlu.ca. Auditions close January 24th. There any details? Ooh, here we go. On top of bragging rights, first place gets a $250 gift card of your choice, and the A-team favorite gets a $100 Ticketmaster gift card. Wow. You can join them February 3rd from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Will's for a night packed with creativity, big energy, and serious talent. Their words, not mine. Maybe there is some serious talent. I know there's some good bands on the campus. So if there's any bands that want to audition for that, go audition for that. I think you have a good shot at winning this. I don't know the kind of talent on campus. Next up, coming fresh hot off the Instagram account, we got an endurance showdown on January 21st from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Healthy Lifestyles is bringing the Endurance Showdown to the Athletics Complex on Wednesday from 12 to 2 p.m. Put your strength and stamina to the test in a series of classic challenges, including a push-up contest, plank contest, and a wall sit contest. Compete for bragging rights, challenge your friends, and push yourself to the max. Top performers will take home prizes. And from the image here I'm looking at, you got protein powder. That's a really good prize. I can't lie. That's a really good prize. Gotta say. Now for some not so hot off news. This is from last night that I wrote down. If you ever wanted to test your luck, now's the chance with the Casino Royale on January 22nd at the Turret from 7 to 10 p.m. Wear your best formal attire and go enjoy a fairly authentic idea of what a casino is like. Gambling included. Free prizes, mocktails, and cocktails, and more. You know, they say that 99% of gamblers quit before they win big, folks, so keep that in mind when gambling. There's a picture out there of a guy mining, of two men. They're mining. One of them is walking away, and they mine this really deep hole, but they stopped as soon as they were going to find diamonds. And you have another guy on top of him on another level mining. Even though he's going to find dirt, he's going towards those diamonds. You got to keep that picture in mind, because you might be on a losing streak, but that just means your odds of winning have gone up. This is not gambling propaganda. There is a Gold Out Laurier vs. Western basketball game coming up, and there might still be free tickets available. Head over to the Student Union desk on the second floor of the Fred Nicholas Campus Center with a one card to get some free tickets to both the men's and women's basketball game for tonight. And bouncing off of that thread, how about some sports news? The women's hockey team destroyed the Lions 3-0, complete shutout at their game, and extend their win streak against the GGs, or the Gigis, to 6 in a 5-1 win, while the men's hockey team makes a historic comeback with a 7-5 win against Lakehead. And now for upcoming games. Tonight, The women's basketball team versus off at Western, and the men's basketball team faces off against Western, both at the Athletic Complex Gym. The women's basketball team is at 6 p.m., men's is at 8. Tomorrow, January 17th, the women's basketball team faces off against Windsor at the Athletic Complex Gym at 6 p.m., and the men's hockey team faces off against Lakehead at the Waterloo Memorial Recreation Complex at 7 p.m. The men's basketball team also faces off against Windsor at the Athletic Complex Gym at 8 p.m. on January 18th, 2026. The men's hockey team faces off against the Dastardly team at Guelph at the Waterloo Memorial Recreation Complex in Waterloo at 5 p.m. You can get your tickets for all those and more at laurier.universitytickets.com. Once again, that is at... Not at. Sorry, folks. That is at laurier.universitytickets.com. That brings us to the end of the show, folks. I gotta say, it is great to be back on the air. I missed it. I missed it a lot. It's fun. I'll say it was relaxing for a little bit in winter break, you know, not having to write all these segments, but you can't beat this, folks. It's broadcasting. So I love it. I love it. It's very fun. If you want more Radio Laurier action, don't forget about my co-hosts. I will once again plug my co-hosts. I believe most of them have not changed their schedules. If you want to listen into my goat, my dear friend Gabe, he is on every Thursday night from 10 to 11 p.m. He's the show right before me, if you think about it. So, if you want to... good Radio Laurier marathon, listen to Gabe's show every Thursday night, wake up the next morning, and become weather aware with me from 10 to 12 p.m. Awesome stuff. So, that was episode 11 of season 2 of Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. Laurier is one and only weather radio talk show. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to tune in next week for your weekly forecast and more. Don't forget to follow the official WeatherAware Instagram page at WeatherAwareLiam. Hope you have a great day, Golden Hawks. And remember, stay weather aware. We're heading into the weekend. Good vibes all around, especially after a snow day yesterday. So we're going to play us off with a nice upbeat piece from a band that I love. Gonna play us into the break with On Melancholy Hill by the Gorillaz on Radio Laurier. Up on Melancholy Hill.